Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, we've had guests on our program talking about how best to create a working environment for tomorrow. Virginia Glenzer of Soho Places thinks her offering is right for today's staff. Virginia, welcome to the program. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Soho Places, and why you think it's so.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be part of this conversation. Just a little bit about myself. I don't want to bore anyone. I think it's way more interesting to talk about several places. But roughly, I was born and raised in Paris. I moved in 99 to Silicon Valley. Not the easiest way with my four suitcases. I co-founded a tech company for about 10 years. And then I fell in love with marketing, digital marketing, customer experience. And just 5 years ago, I moved to New York. I kind of got tired of the blue sky from San Francisco. Not that I can complain, because New York is a beautiful city, and I'm really excited to be here. So that's about me. Do you want to know about Soho?
Soho Places, yes, and why you developed it, and what's it all about?
Sure. Yeah, well, you know, I've embarked upon a really interesting journey about, I would say, 2 years ago. You know, we have those voices in our head, one voice that really talks about keeping it safe and being liked by others and not doing anything, you know, dangerous or taking any risk. And there's this other voice that actually pushes you to be creative and be compassionate and just take the risk, because life is so short. So I was reading a book called I Am Keats, and this book helped me listen to that tiny voice about doing something that matters. So I was compelled, and when I listened to that voice, I actually heard this desire to help people who work from home. We all see the explosion of the freelancing market, what some people call the gig economy. And when you work from home and you don't want to spend $500 in a co-working space, and you don't want to end up in a Starbucks or a hotel lobby when you have to meet prospective clients or even do interviews, I mean, how awful is it? You need a space that is flexible. And so I've opened up for the past 3 weeks a new concept. It's called Soho Places. And it's pretty funny that we actually ended up being in Soho in New York. But this place is a quiet space. It's actually soundproof. We have pods of two, carpet, plants. It's a really different experience. And what you do is you can reserve a seat by the hour at $6 an hour. It includes coffee, tea, and some snack, and super good Wi-Fi. And it's quiet. And you can have a private conversation. You can book 1, 2, or 3 hours at a time. And we've been experiencing this and seeing all kinds of people. I have no idea where this is going, but I can feel that it appeals to a number of individuals, from freelancers who need a quiet space to work, or recruiters to have a private conversation with, to interview people, or filmmakers, writers, web designers, you name it. And so it's been a fantastic experience, and every day I'm giving this opportunity to just wake up and do something that I love.
Dan, it's all up to you.
Thank you. Welcome to the program, Virginia. I did something similar. I didn't originate it. I rented it, called a virtual office
I was there for a couple of years, and then I finally migrated to working at my home. I was a small, single-person employee, small business, so I didn't need a lot of office space. And I realized that when I was paying full price for this virtual office, I was spending a lot of money, and I spent a lot of my time out of the office, and that's why I made the switch. But I think that my son, my number two son in Washington, works from his home, but has used a virtual office for the kinds of things that you're talking about. What amazed me about what you were just saying was that how in the world in New York City can you get away charging $6 an hour for a piece of real estate?
That's a great question.
And make any money.
So two things. We all know that retail is crashing. Right, for a number of reasons, people are not ordering. I mean, they are ordering online. The experience of buying in retail stores is just miserable compared to what we're being used to now, ordering on, you know, websites. And so if you go in New York, and it's not just New York, but, you know, empty malls, it's dramatic. There are empty real estate or retail stores on every block. So we have the business model that we have is we come in, we go to those landlords, and we tell them, hey, your store has been vacant for about a year. It creates a ghost feeling. It's bad for the surrounding businesses. Let us move in. In 5 days, we'll just put, you know, soundproof the place, get the furniture in, drive people from the online world into the offline world, and we share the revenue. And if you get a better a long-term tenant, give us 3 days and we're out of there. But it benefits the community, benefit you, so it's a win-win for everyone.
So are you working in Midtown, downtown? Where you have wanted to?
Yeah. We're in Soho. We just opened the very first location. We're beta testing. We're seeing what do people really want and how far are we from giving them what we originally thought of. So we're in Soho on 435 Broome Street.
Do you have a website for your company?
Yeah, people can go to SohoPlaces.com. The neat thing is that we don't have an app. In order for you, you can walk in and just book a seat on the fly, absolutely. And we got a lot of people in between meetings that just end up here. But we also have people who want to have a guaranteed table. They don't want to struggle. They don't want to take any risk for a business meeting or brainstorming with team or whatever the reason is. And so what they do is they go on Messenger. We have a Messenger app, or actually we're using Facebook Messenger bot. So it's a bot that you will be chatting with. You choose your seat, the time and the day. You get a QR code on your phone. You come in and you scan your QR code on a small box in the seat. It turns green, and you know that you have 1 hour. You can renew it, extend it, but you get 1, 2, or 3 hours, and it turns orange 10 minutes before the end of your meeting, so there won't be any meeting overruns.
I just want to clarify to our listeners, Soho, Virginia, how would you describe Soho in terms of New York? It means south of something and north of, what is it,
yes.
South of Houston Street?
South of Houston, south of Houston Street, yep. The closest subway or Canal Street or Spring Street.
So obviously our guest, Virginia is not a New Yorker because it's Houston Street. Houston, not Houston. Houston. But that's all right. So are you in a former
New
retail
Yorkers
space?
New Yorkers
go ahead,
say
John.
Houston. No, New Yorkers say Houston, and out of towners say Houston.
Houston, yeah.
Right.
That's how we know,
that's how we know
whether you're not a native or not.
Right.
Now you know.
So you're in. What kind of space are you in today?
So this space is 1,400 square feet, and we also have local artists because we want to create a community of like-minded individuals. I mean, yesterday we had chill filmmakers. The day before we had graphic designers starting, you know, meeting for the very first time and engaging in really interesting conversation. We're getting all the meetups. I don't know if you're familiar with meetups. It's a group of people who are interested in a particular topic. And one of the challenge for meetups owner, if you're interested, I don't know, you can talk about it. Chocolate lovers, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, you know, book discussion, whatever it is, you can create a group of people and just, you know, gather and talk about this particular topic. So one of the challenges is that how do you want to find people with the same interest? Where do you meet? You know, last month I had to pay $100 from my pocket just to meet with 8 people to talk about something that I'm interested. I just can't do it. It's just too expensive. So we're offering our space for free to meetup owners. So yesterday we had 15 people gathering about Bitcoin. We're going to get 2 other new ones. One is a life coach who wants to share her experience and her skill set. Another woman is driving a small group here in several places to talk about, I think it's journaling with positive, you know, positivity or something like that. So it's fascinating. And so that's also something that we do in addition to showcasing artists.
How are you promoting your service to get these people to come in? What are you doing to let people know about Soho Places?
We're doing pretty much everything that we can think of, from going to local coffee shops and talking with people with laptops, letting them know that there's a better place, a quiet place, a few blocks from there. We're doing, you know, we have small cards that gives 2 hours free to any new customer, and we're putting that on the windshield. We are communicating with on Facebook on doing some advertising. We're out doing some outreach to meetups owners, letting them know that we have a space for them to for free. So we're pretty much doing anything that we can think of. And we're talking to a radio show that we know people are listening, like your show.
Mm. So the how many meetings or how many people can you accommodate in your 1,400 square feet?
So we can fit up to 40 people. We have 10 dual pods where you can have that private conversation. And we have tables of 4. We also have a bigger pod called a cuatro for 4 to 5 people. So from a group gathering, we can host anything from 15 to 50 people, I would say, if it's a networking. We're also going to be doing speed networking, which I'm very excited about because I do a lot of networking, and it's not only tiring, but sometimes you end up wasting your evening. I mean, you talk to people, you're not really interested, and it's kind of awkward to say, okay, goodbye. So in several places, we have those pods, and so you're going to put your phone on a certain timer, like 5 or 10 minutes, and every time you're going to switch from one pod to the other and meet new people. And if you want to carry the conversation later, at least you know them, and you have their business cards. So it's a more efficient and productive and fun way to meet people.
So how is the space configured? What kind of, you said you bring in your furniture. What do you do? When you took over this space, what kind of condition was it in, and what did you have to do to get it ready for it to be used by you?
Not much, actually. We only install coffee. We have a partnership with Birch Coffee, so we had to have a real brewing machine. Apart from that, it's just we have carpet tiles. Again, you have to remember that we are able to move in and move out in less than 3-4 days. So nothing is definite, and it's really an easy way and process to get us installed in any location, whether it's a hotel or a mall or a retail location. And this is a storefront. We're not, this is a, you know, people today want to work in a different environment. They're just specifically, and specifically millennials and baby boomers. Those are the 2 target audience that we're that we're seeing the most. It seems that's who we are driving in. And those people just don't quite fit with the current corporate world, you know, going into an office and signing on, you know, at the front desk and taking the elevator. And so, like, with several places, it's a storefront. You just walk by. It's like going into a coffee shop. It's a really different kind of experience and something that people are looking for.
Do the how long a lease do you have for the property? Is it month to month?
Yes, we are definitely month to month, which is flexible for both parties.
Right, and you said if the landlord can get a longer term tenant, all you need is about 3 days' notice, and you can be out. And then how do you notify the people who have been coming to you for say 30 days that you're no longer at this location? Do you get contact information for them and tell them we're now at 48th and 7th or whatever?
Exactly. It's like when you use a zip car and you rent a car by the hour, you would do the same. Garages close or move addresses, and usually it's really close by. It's going to be in the same block or in the same couple of blocks, so it's not really such a big deal.
You know, you're opening up some fascinating opportunities for people. Where you differ from the headquarters group or others is that you're kind of looking more flexible. Headquarters, they encourage people who want a private office for 3 months, 6 months, or a year. Your idea is much more flexible. Am I hearing that correctly, Virginia?
Exactly. It is completely flexible. You pay by the hour whenever you need it. There's no commitment, no membership, and you just walk in. It's as simple as going into a coffee shop and having a cup of coffee. But in our case, it is quiet. I think the world is extremely noisy. And when you're a business professional, you know, there was an article not too long ago about Facebook and Sean Parker talking about what the effect of social media on us, on our brain, and how we became addicted to social media. And I think it is a real issue. And deep down in my mind, you know, the second reason why I'm doing this is because I need a quiet space for myself to think. And we're such in a society where there's a lot of people that are talking about doing something, but they don't do. Procrastination is a big issue, and fear. So everything is against us. And so when you want to be productive and start something new and get beyond your fear, you need to start with finding the right environment, not just the right people, but also the right environment. And so putting a little bit of pressure on yourself, like when you know you have two hours, you're not going to waste your time. You have 2 hours. You're here to do something. And I've seen people coming in with very specific objectives and being inspired by the environment, by the art that we display, by the silence. There's a sound masking technology that allows you to really stay focused. And even though you can hear other people having conversations, you can't really quite make sense of what they're saying. So it's been really a fantastic experience, and I'm hoping that I can help others start their business, create something, meet the right people at the right time. So I don't know if I diverged from your original questions, but it's a completely different experience.
No problem there. We explore all kinds. I was going to throw you another question, which is next week someone wants to do an hour interview with me, and I've been racking my brains where to meet them in New York City. If that would be the type of thing that fits down your alley, correct?
Exactly. Now you know. Not only you're ending up, you can reserve a table, so your table will be reserved. There's, you know, and you can come in 10 minutes before and use the table if it's empty. But it's going to be comfortable. Coffee is warm, and you're going to have a wonderful experience. And then the host, when you're the person that you're interviewing arrive, we'll guide that person to your seat. We have a host, and that person is here to make connection and to introduce you so you can have a wonderful experience on a common ground. So everybody, it really makes people comfortable.
But do you have like a private space that could be done?
So in this very first location, we don't. In the second location and third, part of the vision is to have in the back of the room a completely enclosed meeting room that is for 4 to 8 people, but not in the first one. But I can tell you that those pods gives you a visual and sound privacy that really makes it like you feel that you're alone in the space. We have some life coach who are coming to have private session, and they really feel comfortable.
That sounds fascinating. I may talk to you after the program about this. But anyway, Dan, back to you. I have other questions.
Thank you. So where do you think you're going with this? Are you going to have a franchise model? Are you going to franchise it to people? Are you going to grow organically to X numbers of facilities? Are you going to branch out to other cities? Where do you want to go with this business?
I'll go wherever life wants me to go. I've had that idea for many, many years. I'm really just grateful to be able to wake up in the morning and do what I love. I have multiple options right now, but I think there's a market for a lot more of those in various neighborhood. I've almost every day I have someone asking me, when are you going to open in Upper West Side, Upper East Side? Some people are talking to me about malls or hotels. I mean, hotels have a big issue with empty meeting rooms. And yet, people are traveling all the time, and they need a private space that they know for themselves, where they can have a private conversation. So I'm open to all kinds of possibilities, and I'll just see where that leads me to.
So where do you think, based on where you are today in Soho, where do you think your next location is going to be?
If I could choose right now, I would say Midtown. I've had a lot of town, especially for those who are commuting to surrounding states. Midtown is a very, crowded place where people end up just because of the transportation. But I would love to have a place Upper West Side and Upper East Side, because I know there's a lot of individual, and I've had requests of individual who just wants a quiet place to think and write and design and talk and meet. So we'll see.
So do you think that your positioning tends to be more with the creatively inclined as opposed to the people that are tacticians and strategists as opposed to artists and painters and graphic designers and web designers? Do you think that artistic side is where is your greatest opportunity?
Well, I wouldn't say it that way. I think every neighborhood has their own audience. So I think in Soho we see a lot of graphic designers, filmmakers, really artistic individuals, and that could change. I think in Upper Midtown we'll have a lot of business meetings, a lot more
mm-hmm.
business professionals. If we go Upper
right.
East Side or Upper West Side, Upper West Side, maybe a lot of writers. So it's. I think it really depends on the neighborhood. And Soho is first and foremost a place for the community, and we want to make it
okay.
that way.
Thank you. I'm going to throw it back to Don.
We have been talking with Virginia Glenzer, who has created Soho Places for tomorrow's worker. Actually, I want to say it's for today's workers as well.
Mm-hmm.
A link to her website will be on recalculating.biz. Tonight, but Virginia, what is your website for people?
So you can go to www.sohoplaces.com.
Thank you. Remember, on our website, recalculating.biz, you can hear this program and every other program going back to our beginnings. We're coming up to a year. Virginia, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much to both of you for being so kind and welcoming me.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Dan, our audience knows how concerned we are about employee relations. David Hassel, workplace culture expert and CEO of 15-5, a performance management solution company, talks about continuous employee feedback and more. Oh, David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Okay. David, tell us your website and a little bit about your background before we do anything else.
Sure. So the website is 15-5.com, so it's the number 15, 1-5, and then the word 5 spelled out, F-I-V-E.com. And my background, I've been an entrepreneur my whole adult career. I've started companies ranging from an advertising technology company in New York City to an adventure travel kite surfing company in the northeast of Brazil to what I'm doing today around 15-5, which I've been working on for the last 7 years, which is really a combination of building a profitable, scalable enterprise, but with a deeper purpose. And that deeper purpose is about how do we use technology and influence and create strong company cultures that can bring out the best in people at work.
Well, you're really into continuous employee feedback.
Yes.
Okay. Because I had to think about when I first saw the note about you, tell us about continuous employee feedback and why it's so critical.
You know, in the years past, right, coming out of the Industrial Revolution, business moved a lot slower than it does today. We had practices like the annual employee survey and the annual employee review when things weren't changing very, very quickly. People stayed at companies for a long time. The work was very static. Companies that were on the major stock indexes like the S&P 500 were there for long periods of time. But we now live in an age where things are moving so rapidly. New products and services and technology can come into the marketplace and not intentionally disrupt other companies, but you know, they're just creating something new, and very quickly, you see things like Uber and Lyft come into the fore and completely disrupt the transportation and taxi industry. It's not like that was the intention. The intention was, wow, we have this new technology, we can create something new, and things are moving very quickly, and people are also moving and changing jobs much more rapidly. So these old practices that used to work in a very different age are no longer effective. So as we're moving very quickly and as we're needing to check in and develop our people on a more ongoing basis, regular employee feedback is more necessary, both from the employees and from management. And then you're also starting to see some of these workplace culture crises, things that have come out in the fore from everything from the Me Too movement to, you know, more toxic cultures. A lot of times company leadership are disconnected from what's really going on in their organization because they don't have an effective feedback loop. If you're only asking your employees once, or some companies only do this once every 2 years, like an annual employee survey, you really have no idea about the pulse of the organization, probably until it's too late. And so having a system and a process in place where you can get regular ongoing feedback that's easy to collect and easy to disseminate and easy to understand on a weekly basis makes a lot more sense in the current environment.
Well, how does your system work?
So our product, the fundamental practice is encapsulated in the name 15.5, and it's actually an old idea that we modernized through software and technology that was popularized by the founder of Patagonia actually in the late 1980s. And what he would do is he'd have every employee spend 15 minutes a week writing a report that takes their manager no more than 5 minutes to read. And Yvon Chouinard is the founder of Patagonia. He was way ahead of his time in creating more of an agile feedback process. So rather than having people have to sit down for a big, long thing that they only do once a year, which is out of their normal workflow, the 15.5 practice is something that happens on a regular basis, typically on a Thursday or Friday. Someone's going to spend 10 to 15 minutes a week recapping their week. Here are the challenges I'm facing. Here's the successes that I've had. Here's what I'm focused on this week. Here's what I accomplished last week. Here's how I'm tracking toward my key objectives. And then here are the people that I want to acknowledge around me on my teams through something we call high five. So I can say, you know, hey, Shane, great presentation at that client meeting last week. Or, hey, Stacy, that was really amazing how you created this thing for our company, right? So it's this regular feedback mechanism. And these 15.5 reports get sent directly to a person's manager. And so that manager, rather than spending, say that manager has 6 or 8 direct reports that they would normally spend 30 minutes each with just to gather this kind of information, that's 3 to 4 hours a week. They can get the same insights in about 30 minutes, right? Just by checking in to 15.5, they can scan through each of their employees, comment back on some of these things, loop in other people into the conversations, and it creates this dynamic, very alive feedback loop mechanism. That can really happen anywhere, especially if you whether or not your team is all co-located in the same place or widely distributed. So that's the core piece of it, is that weekly what we call a weekly check-in, and then we layer on things like company-wide objectives that drill down to department objectives, to individual objectives, to create alignment in the company. The high fives thing that I mentioned, which creates this culture of peer appreciation, so people are noticing the work of others and surfacing that for all to see. So it's, again, about creating more transparency. And then something we do on a quarterly basis that integrates with the weekly check-in is something we call the best self review, which is our take on what a performance review would be if it was invented today. And that happens quarterly. It's designed more to support the employee in learning, growing, and developing and becoming what we say is the best self, versus scoring them and giving them a grade. And again, it's a more regular, continuous process as opposed to something done just once a year.
Well, I got a lot of questions. I'm going to turn it over now to Dan.
Thank you.
Great.
I'm interested in your logic.
Yes.
If I understand your process. You want an employee to take 15 minutes in a week to write an update of what was my week like and what did I accomplish, what I didn't accomplish. And I do that every week.
And also,
and I'm wondering
where they're challenged, you know, like here's where I need help, here's what's not going well, those types of things.
Okay. I understand.
Yep.
Okay, I appreciate that, sure. What my concern is that having grown up in the corporate world and had annual reviews for 30 years before I became independent, it's hard for management to grasp subtle changes that may be taking place, especially if they have a large direct report group on a weekly basis, and so that the annual review creates an opportunity to look at the totality of a person's work and a chance to get feedback from their peers or bosses about what has that person done this year. And I'm wondering if doing it weekly is such a fine point that the subtleties of what progress the person is making is lost on the person doing the review over an aggregate period of time.
I completely agree with you. And so the weekly check-in is not actually designed, although we have had some customers use it for this purpose and try, it's not actually designed to replace a review process. There are certain things that make sense to be reflecting on a weekly basis. You know, my progress towards, say, an objective that I've set over, you know, that might be a three-month-long objective or a year-long objective. I might want to be measuring my progress toward that and getting help where I need help and talking about things that happen on a weekly basis. I agree with you that there needs to be a longer-term period of time where we actually assess, you know, that growth trajectory. It's very hard to see that nuance on a week-to-week basis. We believe it should be more than annually, however, for a couple of reasons. One, what I already mentioned, in that business is moving much, much faster today, and employees are not necessarily staying at companies as long. So if an employee stays at a company for an average of 2.8 years, you basically have two opportunities to do that annual review. So we think, ideally, it should be lighter weight and quarterly, at worst, at least twice a year. Because there's another thing that comes into play when you're doing that annual review is there's a psychological bias we call the recency bias, which tends to give a perception when you're thinking about a person at an annual checkpoint. The last 13 weeks play a much stronger role in your perception of that person than the entirety of the year. And we often forget about a lot of things that have happened. So that weekly check-in provides a way to look back and actually see what was accomplished, what were the challenges, what was the growth. So you have like almost a record of that when you're doing that quarterly or biannual review. And I agree with you in that those times are when you would kind of really do that deeper reflection over a longer period of time and reset goals. And also what we say is we create what we're going to call personal development objectives as well, in addition to the business objectives. So each person has something they're continuing to work on in terms of their own growth and development alongside what they're working on for the business.
If the pace is as fast as you say it is, and I would tend to agree with you, I'm wondering, do you get pushback from people that you're trying to convince to take on this process by saying, I like what you're saying, but I just don't have the time to do that?
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't say we all, but many people have a resistance to doing things differently or, you know, to having some level of change in process. There's inevitably, you know, somebody we're talking to when we bring these into organizations that has some sense of resistance. More often than not, once they've done it for a few weeks, they change their perception once they've had a chance to experience it. For an employee, what we often hear is they feel like they now have a voice, that they're being listened to, that they have a direct channel of communication, that the FaceTime they do have their managers. And I want to make a clear point, this is actually not designed to replace one-on-ones and FaceTime, but the back and forth that happens on gathering updates and surfacing issues allows that one-on-one meeting, which we also provide some tool sets for, to really drill in on just the most important things and not waste that time gathering updates. And then for a manager, we're actually saving them an enormous amount of time because, like I said, you know, just to gather these types of updates typically require coordinating schedules with 6 to 8 people who are your direct reports, sitting down with them, asking these questions. And this just shows up on a Friday night, and they can, you know, over the weekend skim through and in literally 20 or 30 minutes have updates from 6 people on their team without having had to have those sit downs and really know where everyone's at. so they can say, okay, now how am I going to allocate my week as a manager? Do I need to meet with everybody, or do I just need to meet with the folks who have maybe these urgent issues this week that I need to address? So, you know, we actually believe we're, and we've shown that we've reduced the amount of time people are emailing, increased the caliber of the FaceTime that they do have, and make it more meaningful and productive. So, but again, yes, to answer your original question, at the outset, some folks do say, wow, I don't know if I have time for this. But, you know, once they experience it, they tend to change their tune.
And just playing devil's advocate, if I could, do you find that sometimes you inadvertently produce creative writers?
Inadvertently, yes, that has actually happened. And one of the things that we coach our customers to do in that case, so people, you know, our promise, and this is one of the things that I think we've really done unintentionally well in creating the product called 15.5, it shouldn't take more than 15 minutes. And if it is, you know, it's not being done properly, right? And we're not doing, you know, we've built something too intensive and too bloated, then we haven't done a good job in building out the product effectively. There aren't necessarily constraints inside 15.5, so some people do write a lot, and it ends up taking them longer than that 15 minutes. So we, you know, we use that as an opportunity to say, look, if you're taking more than 15 minutes, you should be, you know, trying to be more concise. And if there's more to say, you can note that, and we're going to have a, you know, an opportunity to dive in deeper on that.
Do you find that there is any feedback from employees who feel like they're being watched?
You know, I will say this. So there have been a very small minority of situations where we've had that feedback, and typically that has a lot more to do with the intention behind why someone's using our product and what their culture is like than the product itself. Because our intention at 15.5 is to create an outlet and a structure for managers to engage with their employees with the intention of supporting those employees in growing and developing and doing their best work and having that kind of support, creating a coaching mindset for the managers to use that. And so the companies have come to it with that intention and where the employees really understand this is actually for their benefit and for so that they can have a voice, they get the coaching and support they need from the manager. You know, they're engaged in the process. We never hear any issues from folks who are using it from that standpoint.
One of the things that came to mind when I was listening to you speak is that our language skills as a country have deteriorated dramatically. The use of acronyms and slang, abbreviation, BFF, all those kinds of things, I was a merit badge counselor for the Boy Scouts of America working on five specific badges required for Eagle, and one of them was communications. And I did it for 18 years, and I was amazed at some of the best students who are working for Eagle Scout, how much the written ability declined over the 18 years that I was a merit badge counselor. And so I'm curious about whether there is some reluctance on some people who can command the English language to put a sentence down on the paper that is coherent and understand.
Well, that is, you know, I will say that there is a generational shift happening. The millennial generation now makes up the largest contingent in the workforce. They do have different styles of communicating. They've grown up with technology. They're the first generation to grow up with the technology that we now are all used to, with these phones in our hands and things like that. And you know, there are certain expectations that they have in terms of how they can communicate and what they're comfortable communicating. I think that, you know, at least on my team, I haven't noticed, you know, any issues per se in that regard. And we have, you know, we have a number of millennials on our team. But I have heard that from, you know, from folks who are an older generation of workers. And there are certain things that we do to try to accommodate that and provide the ability to use emojis and things like that so that people can have, you know, a similar way of expressing themselves with 15.5 in addition to just the text. So, you know, hopefully they're not, you know, using these acronyms and abbreviations to an extent where it's not readable and not professional. But we try to, you know, so that's our problem on that.
Okay, back to you, Don.
I got a lot of questions too. You know, it's ironic, David. 2 weeks ago, I happened to be someplace where a company was demonstrating their system, whereby they would send out to an organization's employees a kind of a game and a quiz every Friday, and the whole purpose was based exactly on the same system you were. But their idea was to test morale and to test how things are going. They created a game, interactive. You ask, you know, you answered a question, and you solved the puzzle, and you're eligible for a prize. At the time, I was just surprised, and then you come here and bring you your tested system. And I guess the my question is this a result of kind of our multi-generational workforce today where we seem to be combining things, or is there other factors involved?
Well, I do think the generational shifts we're seeing in the workforce are a key driver as to why there's a rise in demand for services like 15.5. And, you know, so we do something similar. I forgot to mention that we do have this portion of the 15.5 called what we call the pulse check. And it's just a very simple question at the top of the 15.5, how are you feeling? And people just give a number, 1 through 5, and that number gets aggregated, and they can give more commentary as to why, but that number gets aggregated, and you can actually literally see the trend of your company by department, by physical location, by individual, and see how their mood and feeling in the company is shifting and changing over time, which is fascinating. But I do think that, you know, this move to more communication of less depth more frequently is driven as much by the change in technology and the shift in the speed of business as it is by the generational shift that we're seeing happen. And, you know, and I think that's likely going to continue. And I think as business leaders, we have to find a way to bridge the gap between different classes of workers who may have different working styles and ways of relating.
Well, let me ask you a somewhat related question, but one I feel is important. Do you also find that companies with workers at home or in dispersed locations need this more than more concentrated workforces?
You know, that would be an accurate hypothesis, and that's something that we wondered in the early days as well. I would say it's absolutely very useful, and probably maybe even a touch more useful for teams that are distributed, where you don't have the regular check-ins, unscheduled check-ins, where you might just bump into somebody in the hallway. But we actually have found it's nearly as valuable to any company, even if they're co-located, because the time that people actually tend to make the time to be consistent, to have that level of consistency as a manager and checking in with your people every week, especially if some people in your team are traveling or they're not there, your schedule is very full. This allows all that to happen on an asynchronous basis and make sure that the most important communication that needs to happen is happening on a consistent, regular basis. So it just basically creates an insurance policy and a structure for that to happen regardless of what's happening in the business and with people's schedules.
Well, our program is focused more on small business. Does your approach work better in larger corporations, or do you modify it for smaller, leaner organizations? Does size matter?
Size does not. You know, when I first created the product, I thought it wouldn't be much value, wouldn't be very valuable for teams, say, less than 20 people. And in fact, our very first pricing model was based on a minimum of 20 people. We quickly learned that very small teams, as small as three, were getting a ton of value out of it. And so we dropped the minimum to 10, and now we don't actually have a minimum. So you can sign up for as many people as you want. And we literally have teams ranging from three people to nearly 3,000. So I would say it works all the way on the very, very small end, all the way up to mid-market size companies. And we're the only company of our particular type and class that, you know, allows a fully self-service model that, that even smaller companies can just go on, sign up, start using it immediately, connect with, you know, connect with their employees and get support from our team very easily. So yeah, it works well with different, you know, variety of different size organizations.
So, you might have said it earlier, but, just to clarify, I, the employee, fill this form out electronically. It then goes up to my supervisor and then is aggregated by you?
Correct. So the filling out happens inside of either a web application through a web browser like Safari or Chrome or Firefox and or through an iPhone. And then the same thing, the manager logs in and they see a list of their employees and they can go through each person very quickly. And company leadership can also go in and run custom reports and see, like, the graphs and things of the pulse check that I mentioned. Or they might say, you know, let's see, I want to see a list of all the challenges that my engineering team's facing or all of the successes across the, you know, the entire company. And you can then slice and dice the data very easily and see information across the entire organization or parts of it and then even engage in commentary with those different people.
Mm-hmm. Your website for people?
Yes, it's, again, it's 15five.com, so it's the number 15, 15, the word 5, FIVE.com. And you can also email us at info@15five.com as well.
Well, we're going to make sure that a link to your website is on recalculating.biz tonight. Dan, do you have one last question?
Yeah, I was just curious. You facilitate the questionnaires that employees fill out?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, so there's a small number of default questions. The ones that I think should be in every single 15-5 and every account are some version of what went well this week? Where are you succeeding? You know, from a positive psychology standpoint, I think it's important to start with the positive. And then ask, you know, what challenges are you facing? Some people choose to modify that and say, you know, what challenges are you facing and how have you tried to address them yourself and what support do you need? You can lengthen it out. But basically, you want someone to say, like, where am I stuck? Those two are probably the static ones that you'd want to see every week. And then we allow a question queue or any number of other questions. But I prefer a queue to keep the number of questions in any given week very low. So say you'd have those two static questions and then the queue. And in the queue, you could have anywhere, you know, a different question rotate in every week, for example. And we provide a very rich question bank with categories from coaching to culture development to performance development, all sorts of things like that, that you can go through and get ideas for questions that you might want to ask. And you can always ask an ad hoc question.
Okay, and I just have one more question, Don. Do you help the leader evaluate what he or she's getting to help them spot trends?
Yeah, so the trends, the way we help people with trends, we don't do a great job of doing that strictly through the raw text data. But with our plus accounts, you can ask other types of metric questions. So, for example, you might want to ask a question monthly that says, on a scale of 1 to 10, what was your workload like? And then people can add their own commentary to it. But then you could start to see, wow, you know what, our average workload has shot up from a 6 to a 10 in the last 3 weeks, and maybe, you know, maybe we're overworking people and things like that. So you can ask numerical-based questions that you can then graph and see those trends.
Good. Thank you, sir, for your answers. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Great spending time with you guys.
It's really been terrific. David, we've been talking with David Hassel. He's founder of 15.5.com. Thank you so much, David, for being with us. Tell me, Dan, tell me about your latest book.
My current book that's coming out, I should say, is Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? And it's really the first book written for children between the ages of 9 and 12 and their families dealing with dementia. Dementia is a growing problem with the elderly in the United States and around the world. And we are not very well informed about what's going on, what's happening. So I wrote this book in the form of a mystery. And I have two little girls, 9 and 12, who have a magical power to be able to find things that are lost. And so they go to their dads and moms and they say, you know, we work all over the neighborhood helping people find things, and we seem to find things. And their dad says, yes, you have a magical talent to do that. And they said, we'd like to start a business to see if we can help other people. So they decided to start a business. The two girls' name are Hudson and Charlotte, and they start H&C's Lost and Found. If you've lost it, we find it. And so they build a business, and they convince the dads to build them an office and a treehouse in the backyard. And they get busy making posters and flyers trying to get customers. And their dads take them downtown, and they put them in the windows and on the telephone poles and light poles. And they go home, and first week goes by, and nobody comes. And the second week and third week, and nobody comes. They're really, really dejected. And the fourth week comes, and there's a knock at the door, and they walk over and open the door, and there's a young man standing there with one of their flyers in his hands. And he says to them, my dad says the reason why my Grammy can't remember me is because she's lost her memory. And your flyer says you find things that are lost. Can you find my Grammy's memory? Well, they don't know anything about memory, so they take his name, and they go see their dads to see what can happen. And the story evolves into how they learn about what dementia is and what's going on in the body when somebody has dementia. And then they decide, while they can't find their customer's memory, they can help him build the tools to retain her in his memory. And so at the end of the book, there are about 13 things that families can do together to work on to preserve the memory of grandma and grandpa so the generations can know who these people were.
Cool.
And that's the story.
What a great book. When will it be available, and how can people get it?
Well, it'll be available on Amazon.com. A lot of people who have read it, who've had moms and dads that have been stricken with Alzheimer's or dementia, tell me that they really now begin to understand what's happening in grandma's brain. And we took a different approach. Rather than do the typical brain cross-section, I work with the artist, and we design highways in the brain. And there's a brain of one of the little girls and the brain of Grammy. They both have highways, roads, but where the girl's brain, everything is green and go. Grammy's brain is full of no left turns, do not enter, stop, no right turns. So all of the messages that need to come from our brain get screwed up, and we can't function. Great illustrations, though. Wonderful illustrations.
Well, say goodbye, Dan.
All right.
Time for us to go.
Thank you for joining us. And by the way, if you didn't hear all of today's show, you can go to recalculating.biz, and you can pick up this show and past shows. To expand your knowledge as becoming more successful
entrepreneurs. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for being with us today. From Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.